It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. It's Thanksgiving week, and we want to know what your travel plans are. Gas has been relatively cheap in the past couple of months. Here in Wisconsin, they hit a three-year low last week. So, are you driving to your destination for the holidays, flying, maybe staying put? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email, talk@WPR.org.
Before we take your calls, we're going to talk more about why gas prices have been lower and what's causing them to creep up a little bit now.
Jim Ritterbusch joins us now. He's president of Ritterbusch & Associates, an oil trading advisory firm. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Rob. How are you doing?
Real good. So as I mentioned, three-year lows last week on gas prices here in Wisconsin anyway. Why did the prices taper off there?
Well, the easy answer is simply the fact that crude prices came down about $12, roughly 11% since around Labor Day, and that represents about 65% of the price impetus behind gasoline prices. So gasoline followed on down.
And so what's driving what drove the crude prices down then? We'll follow that thread.
Well, following that concept, crude in the United States is a completely different animal than elsewhere in the world. We have production running at near 25-year highs. We've got a supply surplus of about 45 million barrels against average levels. And refinery activity here of late has been fairly low, and as a result, there hasn't been a lot of demand for crude.
You know, you wouldn't have to go back that far where if I said gas is cheap, it's just over $3 a gallon, people would have looked at me like I was nuts. Are we ever going to go back to the days of dollar-something gas, even low $2-something gas?
No.
No. What changed? Was there some fundamental change that says those days are gone?
Well, I mean, the fundamental change exists within this elevated crude price that's going to be around for a long time, notwithstanding the increase in U.S. Shale-related production. So we've got a lot of what I call MENA hotspots, Middle East, Northern Africa, and hotspot countries such as Libya, Syria, Egypt, Iraq. It's a fairly long list, and within that list, there's a lot of disruptions that have been taking place, and I don't see an end in sight to that. On the demand side, you're seeing Chinese economic recovery still proceeding at a strong clip, and that's prompting a strong demand from China and India and some of the other emerging economies.
It seems like that's the really big deal worldwide. I mean, we can talk about turbulence in those oil-producing nations you mentioned going back decades, but places like China, a lot of other economies that are emerging, they're going to keep using more and more and more fuel, and that's not going to go away anytime soon.
No, that that dynamic is not going to shift. You're going to see Chinese economic growth slow. You're going to see other areas coming in and supplying China with their crude requirements. But at the end of the day, China is going to be a very strong consumer, and someday it'll be a larger consumer of oil than the United States.
What puzzled me some was over the big recession here in the United States, and we were not alone in that recession. You'd expect fuel demand to drop a fair amount. There's just less going on in the economy that needs it. So why didn't prices fall when that happened?
Well, we didn't see fuel demand drop that much, but we have seen it leveling out in the past a few years, and prices haven't dropped simply because it gets back to the crude story. As long as crude stays up here at around $95 to $110, where it's been fluctuating much of this year, you're not going to see much downward pressure on gasoline prices, especially since we pushed back a lot of imports that used to be coming into the East Coast, and we've increased our exports out of the Gulf Coast. So gasoline's becoming more of an internationally traded market at a time when you'd think that compressed demand would be lowering prices, but that's simply has not been the case, at least beyond this $3 level that some states have seen.
We've seen a big rise in natural gas, fueled in part by the shale sources you mentioned earlier. I know that's putting a dent into the use of coal for power plants. Is it having any kind of comparable impact on demand for oil?
The relationships that we used to watch between natural gas and oil simply aren't there anymore. They're being driven by a completely different set of forces. So, the natural gas story is a different one. It's similar to in the respect that we are seeing a big increase in production from shale related areas, but on the consumption side, it's a different list of consumers, and the industrial segment isn't as important as it used to be, and it's primarily a market that's increasingly being driven by short-term weather forecast.
So when we saw gasoline prices go up over $3, there's a lot of talk. The era of big cars is over. We're going to drive less. We're going to drive more fuel-efficient cars. Has it come to pass that way in the years since then?
No. The American consumer has a pretty short memory. So, we've seen the rotation back toward big trucks and SUVs since we saw gasoline prices decline from over $4 to toward $3, and that's the new trend, and that gets back to what we said before. That's one of the reasons why we haven't seen a huge decline in consumption. It's because of this shift back toward preferences for the larger vehicles. But at the same time, we are seeing the overall car fleet in the United States becoming much more efficient as we see the older cars replaced by newer, much more efficient vehicles.
We've got a question from a caller. Lou is with us in Green Bay. Lou, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'd like to ask your expert, why is diesel fuel so high and has virtually not come down since Katrina, when it spiked at then an astronomical over $4.50 a gallon? I have a small diesel car, and there's a lot of us out here that have it, and now we're paying on average 60 to 80 cents a gallon more than regular.
Well, I'm right there with you, Lou. I've got a diesel automobile myself, and that spread is unusually wide. But we have futures markets in gasoline and diesel, and I can tell you that that spread between the futures and in diesel and gasoline is much smaller. So, just looking at a screen in front of me, I'm seeing it's about 35 cents on the screen. So, with time, that much narrower spread will work into the retail sector, and we're going to see that spread come in. But diesel is a more internationally traded market, although we have seen gasoline exported more and more. Diesel is the hot commodity for export out of the Gulf Coast region. They want it in Europe, they want it in Latin America, and more and more that's becoming a big item. So if you're looking at high diesel prices, one good reason that they're that high is because we're moving a lot of it out of the country.
I wanted to ask you two questions, Jim, before we let you go, about how a couple events might affect gas prices. News of a nuclear deal reached in Iran. Do oil markets watch diplomacy that closely, where that could affect crude oil prices?
That deal's been under the microscope, Rob, for the past couple of weeks. And it was interesting this morning, checking the markets about midnight or so, we saw Brent down about $2.50 a barrel, and then by the end of the day when it closed, it was about unchanged. So we had a knee-jerk response to that item, and the fact that we couldn't keep prices down simply attests to the fact that it's going to take a long time for Iranian barrels to return to the market in force. So maybe beyond the middle of next year, we might see that as a bigger factor in the market. But for the time being, the market kind of looked at it today. We had a psychological effect, and then by the end of the day, we were right back up again.
And then Thanksgiving's coming up. We're all driving over the river and through the woods to grandmother's house. Does that cause the price of gas to go up?
Retail or pump pricing tends to be firm into holidays, all other factors considered equal. And this probably won't be any different. The fact that we've got a little upward momentum going at the pump here in the past week or so will probably keep us lifted up into Thanksgiving and maybe on out into the Christmas holiday. So I think we'll see prices head back down, but it may not be until after the first of the year. And in Wisconsin, on an average basis, you're probably not going to see prices much below $3 next year.
All right.
That's the bad news. The good news is you're not going to see prices. I don't think much above maybe $3.35 or $3.50 here next spring.
All right, Jim. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Jim Ritterbush, president of Ritterbush and Associates, an oil trading advisory firm.
Coming up, we'd like to hear from you. What are your travel plans this holiday week? Are you taking advantage of lower gas prices and driving, or did you just decide to fly? Maybe stay home. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to talk@WPR.org or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. You're listening to Central Time. Coming up, we'll talk to an artist who created a public art space which asked people to complete the sentence, "Before I die, I want to." And we'll find out what you learned from people's responses coming up.
But first, we're going to take your calls now on holiday travel. Where are you going this holiday season? How are you getting there for Thanksgiving and beyond? And here's a big question a lot of people ask. Is it worth it? Would you rather just hunker down and stay home? Is that what you're doing? Maybe have a few people over? Or is it worth it to make the big trip to be with family or friends? Here's the number, 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Talked to some friends, Rob, who said that they were going to have an Indian buffet for Thanksgiving instead of making the long journey to another state. I'm not going to reveal any identities here because I'm not sure their family knows
what
they're doing. But there's that option there. And some people like the huge, full family feeling, but it is a hassle. You have to pack things. You have to plan. You have to get the menu. You have to figure out what you're going to contribute. And you have to put gas in your car. All of that. So it is something that people think about. Maybe just you and one other person, or is it worth it to have this big trip? You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Yeah, or maybe it's a binge movie or TV show watching session you have in mind, a fine way to spend a Thanksgiving. 800-642-1234. And I was also wondering, after our last guest, does the price of gas influence how much you're willing to drive if you're willing to take that old-fashioned road trip? 800-642-1234 is the number, or send an email, talk@WPR.org. Okay, enough blah-blah from us. We've got James on the line from Green Bay. James, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. How are you today?
I'm doing very well today. Oh, thank you. Yeah, just calling in response. I think it's definitely worth it to get to your relatives. It's only a couple times a year, and with the busy schedules and everything that goes on in this world these days, it's really easy to make an excuse not to go, because a lot of people have to travel really large distances and they only get a brief time to spend. But it's definitely worth it. To reconnect with your family, that some people, I think, need to consider that and really do that more these days.
And I wanted to ask, James, how far are you going? Where are you going?
I only have to round trip is only about 120 miles for me.
Okay.
My My sister, on the other hand, is coming from Batavia, Illinois, and a little bit longer trip for her. But it's definitely, you know, I mean, it's so great to see your relatives. You know, on holidays, it's a good time to, you know, make for it.
James, did you ever stay home and have the quiet holiday?
I've made the excuse a few years ago, and I really, you know, regretted it.
Okay.
I really did. I mean, it's okay sometimes, you know, if there are extenuating circumstances, but I'm really believe that, I mean, it's very important, and people really should consider taking the time. There's so many times we just take our family for granted, and I mean, people are people, friends are friends. Family is family.
All right, James, thank you so much for your call. How about you? 800-642-1234. What are your holiday travel plans? Is it worth it to get together with family, even if it's a long distance, a lot of packing, and a lot of driving or flying? 800-642-1234. Danny is with us next in Portage. Danny, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Real good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm 3 days and counting from I take my vacation every year at Thanksgiving. Give me an extra 3 days, so I take the following week off. I'm going to Cancun in Mexico.
Wow.
And I go every year. And I go every year. 86 down there right now.
Well, the weather is helping you out this week. It gave you a little extra cold and snow to make it even more pleasant.
Adding to the incentive.
All right.
Turkey. Starts with a tea and some tacos and tequila, so I'm my tea.
Did it take, the first time you did it, some explaining to family or friends why you weren't going to be around?
No, I used to cook. I was a chef, and I used to do all the cooking, and I got tired of doing it. And I, you know, if I'm going to travel, I may as well travel in someplace I like to go, so...
All right. Well, as you're hanging out on the beach, think about us here in cold Wisconsin. Thanks a lot for calling, Danny. We'll go now to David in Milwaukee. David, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. It's totally worth it. I mean, we're going to Morelia, Mexico, and even though it's my wife's family, I mean, it's, you know, meeting new people. You might meet new people, you know, and I mean, it's a little part out of our lives to your family again or your new family. So I totally, I'm going 2,200 miles to see them. And,
oh, wow.
You know, not even my blood family, but, you know, you don't ever know when your life's going to end. So you got to, you know, meet people and see your family, you know.
David, what is Thanksgiving like in Mexico? What do you have for dinner?
Well, this is going to be for Christmas.
This is for Christmas, okay.
They don't celebrate Thanksgiving there, obviously, because of... Thanksgiving is part of America, you know, Plymouth Rock. And
I thought
stuff,
maybe you brought the holiday with you. So what do you do? What do you do to celebrate at Christmas time?
This is the first time we're going to do that. So I'm not exactly sure how it's going to go. But I'm hoping for the best. And, you know, I'm going to meet some new people and, you know, meet new family. But wish me the luck.
All right. It sounds like you're going to have a great adventure. Thank you so much for calling and telling us about it. And we'll go next to Celeste, who is joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Celeste.
Hi.
Hi, what are you doing?
I am not going anywhere for the holidays. My husband is a struggling medical student, and I just recently graduated, so we are staying here.
So you're going to go the quiet holiday at home route. And how do you feel about it?
Definitely very lonely. All my family is in California, so it's going to be hard. The first time I will not be with family, so it will be hard, but, you know, it's what we have to do.
So are you coming up with plans to make the holidays your own without the family around?
Yeah, it'll be my first holiday with my husband, so I'm making our first Thanksgiving dinner, and hopefully we'll invite some other students out, see if anyone is, you know, not going to be able to go home for the holidays as well, and they can come over to our house.
All right, and what's on the menu, I got to know, for Thanksgiving? Traditional or something
turkey.
Funky?
Very traditional. Turkey, you know, stuffing, the works. Bunch of pies.
All right, well, have a great Thanksgiving in Milwaukee. I'm sure you'll make the best of it. Celeste, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
All right, we had a couple comments online as well. A listener tweeted us, Central Time WPR. He says, Southwest Michigan via car, then train, then bus. I usually did that the other order going to Michigan, car, then bus, then train, but whatever works. And Roxanne in Madison emails, I always go home for Christmas. It's the only holiday that's really special to me, and I have to be home in Maryland to really enjoy it. It's a tradition. Well, you could still share your holiday plans, your holiday travel plans on the Central Time Facebook page. That's Central Time on WPR.
That's right. Keep the conversation going there and leave your comments as well. We'd be curious to know what you're up to. Obviously, people having some different takes on the holidays. Some people going to Mexico or doing something farther afield. Some people staying home and hunkering down. Well, it's great to have a slice of what you're doing. And remember, you can keep in touch with us at Talk at WPR or the Central Time Facebook page.
And whatever you're doing on Thanksgiving, you can join me. I'll be on the air from 3 to 6 here on Central Time. So I'd be happy to spend Thanksgiving with you. Coming up, the artist who created the Before I Die public art project in cities around the world. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Artist Candy Chang has been involved in communities with her art in public spaces in cities like New Orleans, Hong Kong, and New York City. She believes public spaces can do more than provide a service. They can help us make sense of our lives.
In her new book, Before I Die, Candy Chang tells the story about how she turned an abandoned house in her hometown of New Orleans into a public space that explored the hopes, dreams, and fears of the people who live there. The idea people filled in the end of this sentence, before I die, I want to... ...
Well, since then, there have been hundreds of other Before I Die walls around the world. Candy Chang is a TED Senior Fellow, was named a Live Your Best Life Local Hero by Oprah Magazine as well. Candy, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with the birth of the Before I Die wall. It sounds like it began with loss and death and went on to become something so alive. Can you tell us a story about how the idea for it got there?
Yeah. The project really came out of my grief and depression. I lost someone that I loved very much. She was a mother to me for 15 years in my life, and she died really suddenly and unexpectedly. And I went through a long period of grief and depression and eventually gratitude for the time we had together and then also clarity by thinking about death so much. But I really struggled to maintain this perspective in my life. I think it's really easy to get caught up in the little things each day and forget what really matters to you. So I wanted a daily reminder, and I wanted to know what was important to the people around me. So I made this project on an abandoned house in my neighborhood in New Orleans. My friends and my neighbors and I, we painted the side of this abandoned house with chalkboard paint, and I stenciled it with this sentence. And I had no idea what to expect. You know, I didn't know if we'd get tagged over the very next day. But by the next day, the wall was entirely filled out. All 80 prompts were filled out, and responses were spilling out into the margins, and the project kept growing in ways beyond my wildest dreams.
And it sounds like part of the genesis of it was that Joan, the woman that you loved, who had been like a mother to you, she had left things undone in her life, and she hadn't been able to, you know, to fulfill everything she wanted to do, and this was sort of your way of getting people thinking.
Yeah, I think it's really easy to postpone things in our life and think, you know, once I'm done with this thing, then I'll get to the things that I really want to do. And I'm also guilty of it myself, and I realize that it's really easy to neglect your relationship with yourself and the things and the actions that will really nourish you. And I also, for most of my life, really avoided thinking about death. you know, in part because I think I was taught to avoid it. You know, if you bring up death out of the blue, you know, people often say, you know, don't go there, or it's too sad, or you don't need to think about it until you're older. But at this point, I couldn't avoid it any longer, and I realized that contemplating death is actually a really empowering thing. For me, it's, you know, I think about death all the time now, and it's the quickest way to filter the noise, you know, and make decisions more obvious. You know, I found great comfort in reading philosophy, and so many people have come before us who have thought deeply about the same universal questions, and the Stoics were champions of regularly contemplating death, and I think it's a really powerful and healthy tool to reappreciate the present and remember the things that really make your life meaningful to you.
And it usually doesn't happen in a public sense like this. Usually if we talk about death, it's because someone that we loved has died and we're sort of forced to confront it. Or maybe we do it in the privacy of a therapist's office or with a single friend. But the fact that you are asking people to think about their life in terms of their death so publicly was one of the things that was so startling and powerful about this project. Did you expect people to be so open when you put up this wall?
No, I didn't know what to expect. For the past few years, I've experimented in public space in different ways, and ways to reach out to my neighbors, to reach out in public space to share more resources, share more information, figure out ways we can share ideas for what we want in our neighborhoods. And this time, you know, at first they started out quite practical. You know, I asked my neighbors how much they pay for their apartments. I made doorknob hangers to figure out how we could share more resources. I made these fill-in-the-blank stickers on vacant storefronts so we could hopefully share more of our ideas and hopes for our neighborhood. But this project became a lot more personal. My questions turned out a lot more personal, and it made me realize there's a lot of things that only happen behind closed doors, but they could be really helpful to all of us. You know, we're all trying to make sense of our lives, and there's great comfort in knowing that you're not alone, you know, and you're not. You know, everyone that you're standing with in line, and everyone you drive by on the road, and everyone you walk past on the street is going through challenges in their life. But it's easy to forget this because we rarely venture beyond small talk with strangers. You know, there are a lot of barriers to opening up. And that's been something I've been interested in, is how our public spaces can really nourish our well-being and serve us better. You know, we have more and more tools to reach out across the world, but it's still hard to reach out to your entire neighborhood. And we don't bump into every neighbor, so a lot of wisdom never gets passed on. But we do share the same public spaces. And there are a lot of ways that, you know, the local bulletin board can expand.
Can you tell us about some of those first answers that might have moved you or caught your attention on that wall in New Orleans?
What's that? I'm sorry?
Can you tell us about some of the first answers that people wrote to that question in New Orleans?
Oh, yeah. Before I die, I want to plant a tree, sing for millions, abandon all insecurities, tell my mother I love her, eat a salad with an alien. they were really across the board, and that was something I really loved to do.
A lot of people, it seems like, wanted to do simple things. You know, we think it might be the grandiose things, like travel the world, and there's nothing wrong with that either, but a lot of people just wanted to see their kids graduate from college, or they wanted to have children, and they wanted to raise those children. Things that seem like building blocks of lives, but for some people, that's what it was all about.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we realize that we have a lot of universal struggles and longings and fears and confusions and hopes. And one of the things that I think has one of the strengths of the wall for me was that I realized that I'm not alone as I'm trying to make sense of my life, you know.
This idea of thinking about what you want to do before you die, it's gone on to have legs in our culture. I mean, another word for it these days is bucket list, and it's something people think about in that kind of framework as well. Do you think that you started or been part of an international movement to reassess our lives in terms of our death?
I think that it's a universal for sure, and I think maybe that's why the project has grown so quickly, because I never planned to make the project beyond New Orleans, and I posted a few photos online, and that's how the project spread, and then I got contacted by people all around the world who wanted to make a wall with their community, so that's how the project has grown.
Can you tell us about some of the places it's been in the world?
Now there are over 400 walls in over 60 countries and over 25 languages. And they've been everywhere, from Kazakhstan to South Korea to Israel to Venezuela. It's been in a lot of places now, and it's been really amazing to me. The walls have been a kind of constant source of inspiration and therapy for me. There are about 30 to 40 walls, new walls happening, going up every month now.
Oh, wow. And there was one in Milwaukee at Marquette University. I want to read some of them from that wall from here in Wisconsin. Some people wrote, "Make someone's day. Before I die, I want to canoe the Mississippi. Before I die, I want to pass my economy test, learn how to swim." Someone else said, "To see my mom cancer-free." Someone said, "To be a Time Lord." That one's kind of timely with the anniversary of Doctor Who. And another thing that's interesting is that people, it seems like it became a community thing, is in that if someone saw something that they agreed with and that's something they wanted to do too, they'd put a check by it. And they, some of these answers got a number of checks after them.
Yeah, it's an easy way to share deeper feelings with your whole community, you know, and that's still hard to do today. And I think about why we came together in the first place. You know, the city historian Lewis Mumford, he once wrote that the origins of society were not just for physical survival, but for a more valuable and meaningful kind of life. Some of the earliest gathering places were graves and sacred groves. And we gathered together so we could grieve together and worship together and console one another and be alone together. And our public spaces are our shared spaces, and they have a lot of potential to offer us a more valuable and meaningful kind of life. You know, there are many ways that people around us can help improve our lives. And at their greatest, they can nourish our well-being and help us make sense of the beauty and the tragedy of life with the people around us.
We're talking with artist and TED Senior Fellow Candy Chang about her groundbreaking project and her new book called Before I Die.
And we want to hear from you. What would you say if you completed Candy's sentence? So that's, before I die, I want to call and tell us how you finish that sentence. What do you think people you know would say? And does thinking about big questions like this one change the way we see our lives? Here's how you join in. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret.
This is Central Time. We're talking about the powerful community-building project of New Orleans resident Candy Chang. After she lost a loved one, she wrote the statement, "Before I die, I want to," and then let people fill in the blank. That was on an abandoned house in her hometown. Before long, the whole wall filled up with people's fears and hopes and dreams. The project has gone on to 400 other walls around the world. It's still going, and it's the subject of her new book called Before I Die.
And we're taking your calls right now at 800-642-1234. How would you complete the sentence? Before I die, I want to. call us, 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Let's go to the phones right now. We have Teresa on the line in Madison. Hi, Teresa.
Hello.
Hello.
I would write on the wall, next year when I'm 60, I will buy my small RV and travel the coastland of America. I promised it in 93 when I arrived here, and I only have one more year left to wait.
Oh, that sounds beautiful. Do you have plans to make it happen?
Oh, yeah, certainly, yeah. Next summer, I will visit various places that sell them. I know the size. I've talked for the last 3 years about what it needs to have. It needs to sleep four people. I have many, many places, people who've lived in Shored and who've gone various other places, and they always know I'm going to come see you in my RV. And I've even told my friends that if I die before my 60th birthday, they have to place my ashes in the passenger seat and at least drive me around Shored Village. So it will definitely happen.
Wow. Wow, you've really thought about it, and you make it so inspiring. So next summer is going to be the summer of Teresa in her RV. You know, just hearing about that makes me happy. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Teresa.
That's okay. Bye-bye.
And what do you think about that one, Candy? That's a great one.
I love it. I love it. I am all for it. Road trips, I take them all the time. I've taken a lot of road trips across America, and they are like a kind of therapy for me. And so I completely understand Teresa's dream. I support it 100%.
Excellent.
I think I need to plan my next road trip, too.
Yeah, me too. Well, maybe next summer we can all join Teresa. Let's go to Yvonne next in McFarland. Hi there. Yvonne, you're on the air. Are you with us? Nope, from McFarland?
Oh, hi.
Okay, there you are. Hi. What are you thinking about?
I'm thinking about before I die, I would like to see my children healthy, happy, and financially stable.
Yeah, that's lovely. A lot of people on the wall share that sentiment, wanting to see their children thriving. Have you expressed that to them as well, do you think, or is it something that you're thinking about yourself?
Am I what? I'm sorry.
Have you expressed that wish to your children?
Oh, yes. Yes.
All right, beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Yvonne. And that's sort of a common one, isn't it, Candy?
Yeah, definitely. I'd say, you know, we actually recorded over 100,000 responses from walls around the world to get a better sense of, you know, what are the similarities, what are the larger themes. And the five of the main themes are personal well-being, like before I die, I want to come to terms with who I am, find serenity, stop being afraid, overcome depression, find what I'm looking for. Another big theme is love. You know, there's a lot of love on the wall. Another theme is travel, and another theme is helping others. And I think the fifth main theme is family. People have written really lovely things on the wall. Like before I die, I want to bring peace of mind to my mom, see my youngest fly, see where my grandma grew up, see my parents again, make my parents proud, be back in my kids' life.
And it really says something that all those people aren't just thinking of themselves, you know, and cool experiences they want to have, but they're thinking of someone else.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what's been interesting, too, to see how much that people have written about just wanting to help other people, too, teach kids to live, love, and be free, you know, help people through neuroscience, you know, build a school and a shelter, make someone's day, see a just society.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us, Yvonne. And we'll go next to Jennifer in Madison. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi.
Hi. What would you write?
Well, I was, you know, going along with the theme of family, I'd really like to, you know, atone my relationship with my mother.
So that's
it has a lot to do with, you know, when she'll die and when I'll die, so it's on my mind a lot.
So it's something you want to get done, and is it something you have a plan for?
You know, it's one of those things where it's hard to start making a plan for it, you know,
yeah.
How do you atone a relationship?
Right. That's a one that, again, the theme of family people share with you. A lot of people have talked about becoming the person that someone else believed that they were, or forgiving themselves or forgiving someone else. That seems like another trope, Candy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, and for me, when Joan died, I realized that there were so many things that were left unsaid, you know, and I'll never have that chance to tell her how much she really meant to me. And so making this project, you know, made me realize how much I hadn't told my parents as well. So I'm glad that we are now at a stage where we've become good friends, that they're not just worried about if I'm going to live a comfortable life, but that they can open up and be a friend to me as well. And, yeah, it makes me realize that all these things that you want to say at some point, now's the time to do it. You just never know. And nowadays, you know, the making this project made me realize how much more I want to really know my parents. And now I ask them 50 questions for every photograph from their childhood. And each week my dad sends me really endearing stories that only, you know, enhance the, you know, mythology of our lives.
Mm. Do you think that there's something that's powerful about actually writing it down, putting it down in a public space, and making it known to the world when we have these intentions?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's the first step, and it's an important step. You know, it's a commitment to turn abstract thoughts into something more concrete, you know, to make sense of it, to follow where it came from, to imagine where it can go. You know, I've written many things on the Before I Die walls, and like to hole up and read books for weeks, to enjoy more cities with the people I love, to write a bedtime story, to revive a ghost town. And it took months before I even began to act on some of these things. But once I wrote them down, you know, those inklings of urges, like they took root and became firmer in my mind.
And like you said, it crystallizes things.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of my favorite books is The Little Prince, and I think about that scene where the prince, he repeats out loud the things the fox says so that he would be sure to remember. And I feel like I'm a distracted, forgetful person with a really short attention span, and I need constant reminders of the actions that will really nourish me.
Let's go to one more call. We have Steele joining us in Appleton. Hi, Steele.
Hey, before I die, I'd like to reach the state of Satori one more time. I have a 1966 dictionary. Satori, definition, a state of intuitive illumination sought in Zen Buddhism. And boy, what a chill. I think probably everyone goes through that one. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Steele. And spiritual aspirations, that's something else that showed up on the wall.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, everyone's responses have reassured me that, you know, I'm not alone as I'm trying to make sense of myself. And I've been reading a lot of Carl Jung lately. You know, he says it's easier to go to moon than it is to penetrate one's own being. Mm. And mental health really takes as much exertion, as much time, as much hard work as physical health. And one of my favorite quotes is from Joseph Campbell, the mythologist, and he said, "The privilege of a lifetime is being who you are." And you know, it can take us our whole lives to figure that out as we grow and change.
I love that quote. I saw that in your book. Yeah, that's amazing. And in our last, you know, 20 seconds here, we have a Facebook person who wants to know how to bring this wall to their community.
Yeah, absolutely. You can go to our project website, beforeidie.cc. And we've provided a bunch of resources. You can buy a toolkit that contains a really thick stencil to make it easier to make the wall. Or we've provided all the files to download for free so you can make your own stencil. And we have a little guide online, kind of step-by-step guide on how to make a wall with your community.
All right. Well, Candy, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
We've been talking to Candy Chang. She is an artist, senior TED fellow as well, and the author of the book Before I Die.
Coming up, a look at the Automotive X Prize and the innovative cars that came out of it and the inventors who tried to win it. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. This is Central Time on Wisconsin Public Radio.